Hello and welcome to the True Blue at Blue. Go 2 weeks without recording, you can't talk anymore. The podcast I do, Jacob Birch, about the podcast, about the Dodgers. Eric Steven, you're with me.
Hello. God, what a way to start off 2021. Our first record of this year. Yeah, feels right. I like it.
Just start off fresh. Quite a bit of news to chew through over the last couple of weeks, so we're gonna get through it all, starting with some sad news.
Pedro Baez is gone.
not the news I was thinking about.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess I'll have to review the show notes.
After the recency bias, I guess. So, we'll talk about the passing of Tommy Lasorda. Pedro Baez, as you mentioned, little different news there. Some other miscellaneous off-season stuff, and then questions from Craig. All of that after this.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So as mentioned, as I'm sure all Dodger fans know, Tommy Lasorda passed away earlier this week. This is going to be mostly you, I think, talking about him. One personal note before we move on is, I've been going to baseball fans since when I moved to LA when I was four. I think I went to one game when I was four, but they're all blurred, right? I remember eating Dodger dogs. I remember getting souvenirs. I remember some of the players, but no distinct memory. My first distinct baseball memory, whether in person or at a game, or watching on TV, was Tommy Lasorda's retirement speech. I was at I happened to be at that game, and I remember thinking as a kid, I remember thinking it was the literally 5 minute standing ovation. I don't know how long it actually was, but I remember like being in line to get a hot dog and just the nonstop claps. And I didn't know why they were doing this. I didn't know who the old guy on the field was. Maybe I had like kind of remembered him. I was I think he's the manager or something like that. And I had to like ask my parents like, what is going on? I'm so confused. So that was. I think July 30th, 1996. July 30th, 1996. So there, my first distinct memory. So
wow,
you can kind of term my baseball fandom as really the post Lasorda era, which is why I think it's going to be mostly you talking about him.
So, and I'm just wondering, like, not that you would have noticed at the time because you were so young, but like, I bet you the line to get that hot dog was really short.
I remember, if I remember right, like it was like one of those is like this national anthem where I was, the line didn't change because everyone was already in line and they turned to face the field.
Oh, I see. Okay.
If I remember, again, I was 10 at the time, so probably not memory with perfect clarity, but I remember not being in my seat. That was the main thing I remember.
Like, I mean, it was sort of passing away. I mean, I hate to, like, I don't want to be like callous about this. It's just like, you know, he was 93. And he had been experiencing, he was in the hospital for like 2 months with heart issues. He had just been sent home like earlier in the week after being in the hospital for 2 months. So to say this was definitely not, you know, expected, but like it wasn't that surprising, but it's just a bummer. Like, obviously it's like a huge, huge bummer. Like, and you know, so what happened was, so I think he was released from the hospital earlier in the week, had a cardiac arrest, heart attack on Thursday night at home. I guess was, I don't remember if he was pronounced dead at the hospital or on the way to the hospital, but they, you know, paramedics tried to resuscitate him and they didn't. So he died Thursday night. So the news broke Friday. But yeah, like it's impossible to like sort of measure, like, we were going over this in the comments the other day. Like, who's the most, like, or where, how would you, like, rank, you know, certain Dodgers? Like, and, like, I was having trouble with this because, you know, it's, like, Jackie Robinson, like, in terms of, like, players, like, not only, like, incredible player, but historical impact. And, like, he has to be number one, I think. But then people were saying, like, what about, like, Lasorda and Scully? And, I, like, for me, they don't like count in that way, but yet that in a different way, like Lasorda specifically, I sort of arrived on this that he embodies the Dodgers more than anyone else, just because he was there for 71 with the team for 71 years. It wasn't all consecutive because there was a period where as a player, he started with them and then he went over to the Kansas City A's and then came back by the end, I think 1960, when he retired as a player and became a scout. And then it was continuous from there. But it's like, man, like that's a long time to be associated with one team. And he was always like the face kind of the franchise. He was a like tremendously like popular manager. And like you, like nowadays, like think about it in baseball right now, who are the popular managers? Like there's no one close to like what Lasorda was. And I don't know if you'll ever sort of see that again. I have some notes just going over, like, so, you know, he was a player with the Dodgers. He got to the majors in 54 and 55. He pitched for the A's in 56. That's where he got most of his major league time. He was 0-4, 6.48 ERA, more walks than strikeouts. In the majors, he had some moments in the minors. I think there was a game where he like struck out 25. And he was like a, you know, for lack of a better term, a bulldog, right? Like he was like tenacious and under the rules of the time in 1955, the Dodgers had this kid, they signed Sandy Koufax, and they, because of the bonus baby rule at the time, if you got a bonus of a certain amount, you had to be placed on the major league roster or be like other teams could like claim you. You have to, you know, for a certain amount of time. So they had to put Koufax on the roster, and to create roster space, they cut Lasorda. And years later he said, you know, he's like, I still think they made a bad move, you know, just obviously joking around. But like he came back to the Dodgers as a scout, was pretty active in the 60s, and then sort of mid-60s started managing in the minors, and that's where it sort of began his like legend, I guess. It was 8 years in the minors, half at rookie league, half in AAA, and the good run of that was like he basically coached like all the really good players the Dodgers like were bringing in the late 60s. Their 1968 draft is legendary, but they also had some players they brought in before that, and he managed just about all of them at multiple levels, like in Ogden and then Spokane. The 1970 Spokane team, It was named by Baseball America a few years back that they were like the best minor league team of the second half of the 20th century. That team had Bill Buckner, Steve Garvey, Davey Lopes, Bill Russell, Bobby Valentine, and then Charlie Huff, Doyle Alexander, and Jeff Zahn, among others, on the pitching staff. Those are all like longtime major leaguers, all on the same team. So after that, he was a third base coach under Walter Alston. And then eventually, the end of the 76 season, took over for Alston. So at the time, like, Alston managed 23 years, and then Lasorda followed by managing 20 years. And it's like, that's, you know, unprecedented, like, you know, back-to-back sort of longevity for managers. It was like a symbol of stability, you know, for the franchise. And you saw, like, how after Lasorda left, obviously there were a few ownership changes, but, like, the managers – position wasn't nearly as stable, and you saw the Dodgers sort of suffer in a way. Not that it's all directly related to Lasorda, but like that's a symbol of it, I think. But you know, he had like his weird spots too, like under the Fox ownership, when they fired Fred Clare, Lasorda was interim GM for a while, and when he was interim GM, he traded Paul Konerko for Jeff Shaw. Not the best move. And then like later that offseason, Shaw had the right to demand a trade under the rules of the time because he was like traded in the middle of a multi-year deal. And then so like the Dodgers ended up giving him a contract extension. And I'm not sure Lasorda was like fully aware of those rules at the time. But anyway, like the last two decades plus, Tommy Lasorda's main role was being Tommy Lasorda. We saw him at a Dodger Thoughts event. This had to be, 2005 or 6? And Jacob and I were both there. We were sitting next to each other. And at this point, like, Lasorda, like, he had canned speeches, you know, or he was, like, a motivational guy. But, like, at a certain point, like, he told stories over and over and over again. And it was just, like, he would go to a certain group and like, okay, who am I speaking to? And then, all right, then start the thing. So he started talking to us and he was like, he was rambling on forever. And being immature idiots that we are, we spent most of the time like laughing. And like, it was very hard to like keep from totally cracking up during that speech because we were comparing him to like, Abe Simpson,
specifically onion on my belt speech.
Yeah. And God, that was a giggle fit for me because I could not look at you like specifically, but like, I mean, it was a fine, whatever. It was a normal speech, but it wasn't, I don't want to like denigrate this sort of, but like, I would say there's been a few times where either before a game on the field or after the game in a press conference, like, anytime a live microphone was around Lasorda, like it was, you know, all bets are off. You never know what he might say, like before game or after game 6 of the 2017 World Series. They had so the Dodgers tied it, right? And then they, like, Dave Roberts is going into the press room for his post game conference, and like Lasorda in the tunnel there was like, he tracked him down. He's like, hey, he's like, unless you win tomorrow, you haven't done shit. And it was all caught on tape. It was really funny.
This podcast has to be explicit, by the way, so I'm not mad at you for once.
No,
you can't do the Tommy Lasorda podcast and have it not be explicit.
So part of the things with the pandemic sort of robbed us of us personally of an annual like New Year's Day get-together. We've been getting together for dim sum the last few years with some friends. And so we had a Zoom call, Jacob and I and Craig and a few other friends. And we introduced one of our friends, Sissy, who had never seen or heard the Dave Kingham's performance, Tommy Lasorda rant, or the Kurt Bavacqua Lasorda rant. So we introduced those to her. And God, watching someone see that for the first time was amazing. And it was hilarious. You know, Lasorda, there's clips of him like fighting mascots. I mean, he was a legend, right? Like
Dodger. David Young was on that call, and I might be doing this falsely, but I'm going to attribute this to him because I remember him saying this, was that whenever people bring up, oh, why don't the Dodgers have a mascot? The response is, they do have a mascot. It's Tom Lasorda.
Yeah. And like, and not like in a necessarily in a bad way.
No,
it's
I
like
don't think so.
Literally, he just is the Dodgers, right? Like
that's ever present. Yeah. No, yeah. I don't think of that as an insult at all.
And you talked about how long like the ovation was right, when he retired. When you were a kid, like we saw this over the last few years, like he'd go to some games and he'd be sitting in like the owner's box, like right near the on deck circle. And sometime late in the game, if it's an important game, the video board would pan to Lasorda. And like, I felt bad because after a certain time, it's like, you're making this guy get up, right? Like from his seat, but he would get up and just get a roar, like, and it's a loud roar, like he's so loved, like and you sort of felt that like every single time, even the last few years. He was like brash and stubborn and all this, like there's the downside of that too, right? Like in 1991 his son Tommy Jr. died AIDS complications and pneumonia, and for years like Lasorda like didn't even acknowledge that he was gay. There was Jay Jaffe and his excellent write-up of Lasorda
really
at FanGraphs, and he referred to a 1982 Sport article about Glenn Burke, who was not teammates knew at the time he was gay. Some did, but he wasn't out, you know, necessarily. But then, like once the like he eventually got traded from the Dodgers, and there was a report that Lasorda threatened to fight Glenn Burke at one point, and who was later traded that year. So like. He wasn't always like the friendliest, you know, in terms of that. This is where
and another reason why I thought you would probably be doing most of the talking here is that,
yeah.
Again, as a fan of baseball, fan of the Dodgers, post his managing career, I didn't know him as a manager at all. Like, outside of in retrospective. So, in that frame, to Tommy Lasorda was to me was that sort of funny, stubborn, ever-present manager, but the story about how he treated his son is almost on equal footing for me. So I realize that I have a skewed perspective of not the most positive, and I realize that for a lot of people that's perhaps an unbalanced take. But at the same time, it's pretty egregious homophobia that dominated how he treated that, and what good could have come from it had been able to get over it. So
right, like so someone in his position, right, could have done a lot to help like that cause or acceptance, and just like that would have gone a long way, like had he,
right,
you know. But like I would say we talked to a few people on Friday, I guess. Oral Hershiser, you know, he, as you might imagine, like had I saw him do a number of interviews actually, but he mentioned multiple times that Lasorda was his baseball father, and credited him for a lot of his success. The famous thing with Hershiser and Lasorda was they called it the Sermon on the Mound, although I'm pretty sure they had I think this meeting actually took place in Lasorda's office and it wasn't actually on the mound. But like Hershiser are struggling in 84, like the first few months. This is his first full season, and he was like timid, right? That's a weird way to put it, but like Lasorda was saying, if you had you know, if you come in and you're a tough guy and they say, here comes Bulldog, like they're going to fear you. And you have to have that mentality all the time. And so that's how like he sort of willed Hershiser to have the nickname Bulldog. And like, hey, it worked, like whatever. He's one of the greatest Dodgers pitchers of our lifetime or my lifetime. I don't know. So like he was pretty legendary in terms of like motivating. I obviously like 88. Dodgers are like always going to be my favorite team, I think. I was 12 at the time. You're not really going to top that, no matter what, even though I'm certain like you know, they've had better teams. I know they've had better teams since then. Like last year was easily better. The last few years have been better, but like that's always just going to be my favorite team. So I'll have soft spot, you know, for Lasorda for that, obviously. Stan Kasten had a good story. Like just we talked about like how Lasorda and the Dodgers are sort of interrelated. So I'm just going to read this. This is from Stan Kasten last week. He said he first met Lasorda when Kasten was GM of the Hawks, and Mike Fratello was coach of the Hawks, and he knew Lasorda because Lasorda, they were both Italian. And like, so Lasorda was, you know, like that's another thing. He was like a famous guy. Like imagine this, like before he, when he got the job managing the Dodgers, his first game, Frank Sinatra did the national anthem. Like he was already like famous to that level before he became manager. Lasorda was. So like, that's crazy. But anyway, this was Stan Kasten. He said, my son Corey was getting an autograph and he made him shake hands and made him say please the way you're supposed to. Then he said, now repeat after me. I love the Hawks. And my son goes, I love the Hawks. Now repeat after me. I love the Dodgers. And then Kasten goes, well, this was a problem for my son. He couldn't trip my son up on that. He said, but I love the Braves. And Tommy just roared with laughter. Then he gave him his autograph to Corey, your friend, Tommy Lasorda, you and the Dodgers are great. And Kasten said, because that was the ultimate compliment for Tommy Lasorda comparing someone to the Dodgers. Fast forward 35 years. Now I'm running the Dodgers. And I see him meet a young kid and go through the same exercise, the same rigmarole, shaking hands, saying please, asking him which team he supports and all that. And then he signed the autograph to Joey, your friend, Tommy Lasorda. You and the Dodgers are great. That never changed. So, and then, you know, that was sort of Kasten's way of saying like he'll always associate Tommy with that. Like, and Tommy always associated himself with the Dodgers. He always liked to say he bled Dodger blue and then the big Dodger in the sky and all that kind of stuff. So like, it's hard. You'll never replace that, right? Like that's, he was literally the embodiment of the Dodgers for so long. And that's why it was sad. Like you said, he was 93, he lived a full life, but like, it's still obviously sad to see him go. And it was sort of on some level, cause you know, like Lasorda definitely like cared about this. But he was in Texas for game 6 of the World Series. So he got his last game was to see the Dodgers win a World Series. So in some level, that's kind of cool. Not that you would trade one for the other or whatever. Not that that was actually a transaction, but it's something, right? Like, so anyway, so to sort of transition here, I have a trivia question for you.
I bet I'm going to get it wrong.
Yeah, yep. And I'll just say, judging by how you were
hemming and hawing,
you're definitely going to get this wrong. No, but Lasorda managed 3,040 games in 20 years for the Dodgers. Second most in franchise history to Walter Alston, 3,658 games in 23 years. Now, which Hall of Fame Dodgers manager is third on the team in games managed and won?
I will answer this incorrectly after this.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right. I think I'm mean tricked. I think I'm mean bamboozled. I've seen the phrase Hall of Fame Dodgers manager, and I think you're either tricking me or this is a Zach Wheat situation. So either way, I'm not going to get it right. So I'm just going to tap out. I don't know who this third all-time so you, in Dodgers
the reason I didn't want to give this away earlier, but you said you're like, you're trying to go through the Dodgers retired numbers.
Yeah, and I think I was
the only
just...
two Dodgers managers who had their numbers retired are
Lasorda and Alston. And Lasorda, I think I was double counting Alston. So
yeah, so I will give you this answer. It's Wilbert Robinson, who managed for 18 years.
Okay.
Now the top five Dodgers in games managed are all in the Hall of Fame. Leo Durocher managed 9 years with the Dodgers, but also several places elsewhere. Ned Hanlon, at the turn of the 19th, 20th century, managed 7 years. Now, the interesting part about this, I was thinking about asking you this. So after those five, the next three managers in seasons are tied with the same number of seasons managed. Knowing what I just told you, can you name one or multiple of these managers?
Is Mattingly up there?
Yes.
Okay. There you go. There's my guess. I'm tapping out. I'm going away.
So, so the next, the tied for sixth place in most seasons manages five by Don Mattingly, Jim Tracy, and Dave Roberts. So that was a little bit surprising to me, although like thinking about eight managers for at least five seasons, especially when the top three accounted for 62 seasons, that's a pretty good run. But like, yeah. So like, just like if just, a few more seasons, Roberts is going to be like up there in franchise history in terms of games managed. So pretty amazing.
So we have some other news to go through.
Yeah. And much like pretty much the entirety of the Dodgers offseason so far, it's bullpen related. Like, so the first thing was Blake Treinen is back. This was one of those moves where like nobody leaked it ahead of time. Nobody had like, hey, Blake Treinen is seeking this. You know, it was never any of that. It was just the Dodgers tweeting out, hey, we signed Blake Treinen. 2-year deal, $17.5 million plus an option for 2023. So I was looking at our guesses from episode 2034. I would say we were both half right. In this, I had Treinen going back to the Dodgers, but I only guessed him at 1 year, $9 million. I think I guessed 1 year for every non-Turner free agent, so it's going to be rough. Now, you had him going to the Rockies, so you failed, but you had him at 2 years, $16 million, so you basically nailed his monetary value, so good on you. We both got half right. So the way I look at it, like, the Dodgers like are still going to add an impact right-handed bat. It's probably going to be Justin Turner. They've been like sort of pseudo linked to DJ LeMahieu basically because the Yankees are waiting on him.
Some reports and he about hasn't signed yet. Marcel Ozuna as well,
right?
Which is confusing. Like, but
that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But like, yeah, they're whatever happens, they're clearly going to add a relatively expensive right-handed bat. So with Treinen, and then if you add in like their salary arbitration exchange deadline is Friday. We're recording this on Thursday. So just going off some of the loose MLB trade rumor estimates, and even those are sort of variant. And then you add in like filling out the roster with minimum salary guys. They're basically at like $197 million already, and that's before adding the bat. And before accounting for like midseason stuff or potential bonuses for guys. So the threshold is $210 million. So I think they're gonna end up paying the competitive balance tax this year in some form. So not that means they're just going to go hog wild and go way over. But like if you were thinking they might be limited in making moves because of that, maybe not. So that's just sort of a byproduct of this deal, I think. And then the other sort of move happened yesterday, although it hasn't been official yet, but Pedro Baez signing with the Astros. So
who would have thought that?
What?
I said, who would have guessed that?
Right. Nobody. But good for Baez. 2 years, $12.5 million. He also has a club option for 2023. There's some bonuses in there. Now, we were both way off on the money on this. I said one year, $4 million. Again, I undershot everybody. You said 1 year, $5 million, but you said Pedro Baez would sign with Houston. Oh, so you're doing quite well on these free agent stabs in the dark. But like, if you look at it, like Pedro Baez, and he was in the Dodgers organization since January 2007. That's crazy. Only Kenley and Kershaw had more tenure than Baez. Obviously, he came up as a third baseman. He converted to pitching. Like, Kenley's transition was quick too. But like Baez converted to pitching in 2013, and he was in the majors the next year. Like, that's amazing, right? Like, so, you know, he's like alternated between like reviled and somewhat loved in a weird way, like over the last few years. But like, look, 3.03 ERA in 7 years, his 355 games in relief are seventh most in Dodgers history. 31 postseason games are the third most behind Kenley and Kershaw. Like, he was pretty good, right? Like, just generally, obviously he had his moments, like a ton of, like, especially in the playoffs, a ton of in letting Kershaw's inherited runners to score. Like, there was a lot. He seemed to be on the mound more often than most for those situations. But like, just like generally, pretty good reliever, like, and, you know, good for him for getting paid. So that's good.
And we would be remiss. Dodger games are about to get a little bit quicker. So
I looked this up. So the last 3 years on Fangraphs, I think he had the fourth slowest pace. He's like just over 30 seconds in between pitches. I think Joe Kelly was worse. And like Kenley is up there. So like, yeah, but anyway, I do have a Dodgers rewind that's this was sort of an accident. It's tangentially related to Lasorda, but also to Baez. We'll get to that in a second. So Tommy Lasorda, in his 2 years with the Dodgers, he pitched 8 games. He only made one start, and it came May 5th, 1955. And I looked this up. He walked 2 in the first, and he tied a National League record with 3 wild pitches. and he allowed a run, and he got spiked at home plate by a future Dodger, Wally Moon. They ended up taking him out after the first inning. He got the last 2 outs after getting spiked. I couldn't tell if like they just took him out because he was terrible or that he got spiked. It was probably a combo. But Clem Labine came in to relieve him, and he pitched 6 innings and only allowed 2 runs. And Labine was like sort of this, I don't know, ace fireman might be the too strong of a word, but he was a very like trusted reliever for them. 3.63 ERA with the Dodgers. He pitched for them for 11 years, 1950 to 1960. He had a 1.13 ERA plus with them. Now, saves weren't like official yet. But if they were, he would have led the majors in 1956 with 19 saves. He saved 17 games in 1957, would have led the National League. He saved 81 games for the Dodgers overall. He also won in double digits 3 different years. He was in, you know, a lot of games. He pitched over 100 innings 6 straight years, and he averaged like 115 innings in those. So he was pitching quite a bit. He pitched 388 games in relief in his career, and he's one of the few Dodgers that have more relief appearances than Pedro Baez. I find this interesting, too. So Labine pitched in 5 World Series, 4 of them for the Dodgers and also for the 1960 Pirates. He won 3 of them. He had a 1.64 ERA World Series ERA with the Dodgers in just over 27 innings. His one World Series start was the game after Don Larsen's perfect game in 1956. Dodgers were down 3-2 in the series, and he pitched a 10-inning shutout. The Dodgers won in the 10th. It was a home game. Jim Gilliam walked. Pee Wee Reese sacrificed him over, and Jackie Robinson drove him home with a single. Now, there's only been 3 10-inning shutouts in World Series history. Christy Mathewson in 1913 for the Giants, and Jack Morris in Game 7 of the 1991 World Series. So back to the relief game thing. Baez is 7th in Dodgers relief history with 355 games. Kenley Jansen is 1st with 632. Labine is 4th with 388. Can you name one of the other seven pitchers in the top 10, Jacob?
So I wrote two names down, and one name I wouldn't have come up with if it wasn't for you. And again, I might be wrong. So we'll go with the one I came up with on my own. Jonathan Broxton?
He is one, two, three, sixth.
Ah, there we go.
386. No, fifth, sorry. Yeah, 386.
And then the other name you said, I did double check to make one thing I've noticed about pre-Jacob era, especially pitchers, is that knowing how long they pitch for the Dodgers is really tough. Because you just, you kind of know them as icons, but that could mean, you know, oh, they pitch really well in a World Series, and but they were only there for 2 years. So, I did double check with Charlie Huff.
Yes. He pitched basically like all the 70s for them, 1970, 1980. He had 385 games in relief, so he's sixth just behind Broxton. He also started 16 games for them, but.
And that was the other thing I was going to say is some of these pitchers, like, I feel like were a little, like, did both, and I can't quite tell, like, were they permanent relievers stuff. So that was what I had to double check with Charlie Huff, is I had to make sure he was mostly a reliever.
One other player on this top 10 list is in the Jacob era.
I figured there would be one more, but every pitcher I think of was here for like 3 to 4 years, I feel like, and like not more than that. And I'm sure I'm forgetting somebody, and you're going to tell me who it is.
Yeah. So that one is in 10th place. It's, Eric Gagne.
Okay.
250.
I didn't want to guess Gagne because it's such a, like, you know, name the guy who won the Cy Young as a reliever guess. So.
I looked on this. I was going to say one of them was I thought it was two, but I think only one of them we've done a Dodgers rewind on, and that was Ron Paranoski, who passed away a few months back. He's actually tied for second, 456 games in relief. Jim Brewer is tied with him. Jim Brewer had the first save in Major League history, official save.
First save ever.
So then the other ones, eighth and ninth, are Ed Roebuck, who pitched in the 50s and 60s, and then Tom Niedenfuhr. Tom Niedenfuhr had 310 games. So there's nine Dodgers relievers have over 300 games in relief. And there you go.
I was looking up Guillermo Moda. He was a name I kept wanting to say, but I knew he was
only a few years, but probably right up there because he had
every game. He just pitched every game. hey, you know what time it is? It's the first thing of the year. Are you excited?
I'm so excited.
It's time for
Questions from Craig.
Five questions from our friend Craig, who was also on the call, as you mentioned. It was good. It was good to catch up with everybody.
Yep.
Not quite the same without dim sum around. Way too much dim sum around me, just getting stuffed. But maybe next year? Maybe? I can hope. All right. First one. Later this month, we will find out if any player has been elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame. I doubt it. In honor of Tommy Lasorda, can Eric name the Hall of Fame players that played for him? Bonus question, can you name the Hall of Fame players that played for the Dodgers after Lasorda's manager tenure? Hint, there are two players on both these lists.
I was surprised there's only two on the first list. So Don Sutton and Eddie Murray.
I'm getting both. The answers right now.
Yep.
Correct, Don Sutton and Eddie Murray.
Yeah, but also, like, Piazza played for him. So
that's correct.
Come on. Yeah. But then played for the Dodgers after him. Is it, that was the bonus? Yeah.
Well, yeah. So correct. So, okay. Correct. There are five names on the first list. There are five names on the second list. Two are overlapping.
I gotcha. Okay.
So you were missing two names.
In my head, I read it as two and two. So I was like, wait, all right. So, okay, that makes a lot of sense. Now I'm not remembering. Let's see.
One name is linked to Tommy Lasorda.
Well, actually, Eddie Murray is is on both lists too, because he came back in 97, even though I don't officially recognize that second tenure.
So you did get the names that are on both.
Okay. And then Ricky Henderson is later. Yep. And then Jim Tomei.
Yep.
I'm just trying to think.
You're missing one name on each list.
Okay.
The name you're missing on during his era is linked to Tommy Lasorda. Jay Jaffe talks about this in his article.
Oh.
Infamously, I should know.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay. Pedro.
Pedro.
Yeah.
And then you're missing one name afterwards.
One name afterwards.
Big hint. I saw this player's last game ever. Huge hint.
Last game ever.
Which was a relief appearance in the playoffs.
Oh, okay. Greg Maddux. Yeah.
There you go.
Nice. All right. I'm glad, because when I in my head, I was thinking 2-2, it was really only Sutton and Murray? Like, that was it? Like, I thought it was, like, in total. I was like, that's all he managed? Like, I'm glad it was different than I thought. So,
you want to read the next one?
Sure. And now for Jacob. Tommy Lasorda was manager for record 9 Rookie of the Year players. Can Jacob correctly rank the 5 consecutive Rookie of the Years in the 1990s from lowest to highest Baseball Reference WAR? For Hideo Nomo, for example, I will only use pitching WAR.
So is this the rookie season WAR?
Let me check.
Or is it their, like, WAR as a Dodger?
it's only the rookie season.
Okay. Oh, man, that's going to be interesting. That makes this much more interesting. I have to do the thing where I have to resist putting Todd Zeal's name down. I do it every single time these 5 rookies come up. Not a rookie of the year with the Dodgers.
Todd Zeal rated rookie with Donruss in like 1989 or whatever. But
okay, this is gonna. This will be fun. I'm going to guess that Piazza had the highest.
Yeah, easily. Okay. He was at 7 WAR in 93.
Lord. Is Raul next?
Raul is 3rd.
Okay.
1.8 in, but strike short season. I will say, even if you gave him the benefit of the doubt and added 50% to it, he still would be 3rd.
Oh, okay. Is it Nomo then?
Nomo 4.7. He was so good.
I remember, like, yeah. I guess I remembered even with the strike sharing that Rule did a little bit better, but
yeah.
Karros 4th?
No.
Oh.
Hey, Karros had 0.4 WAR. I if I remember right, his on base percentage was under 300 in 92. he drove in 88 runs and hit 20 homer. He wasn't bad, it was a rough era. He suffered from the era he played in terms of first base production.
Well, at least Hollinsworth, not Todd Zeal.
Yeah. Do you have a guess of what his WAR was in 96?
1 on the dot.
1.1. So not bad. Yeah, you did pretty well.
I'm happy with that. Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was actually going to be as a Dodger and things were going to get really weird. All right. Given how Major League Baseball was able to start their shortened 2020 season with a much shorter spring training, do you think teams could cut 2 weeks off this annual tradition?
No way. Only because, I mean, sure, they did it last year, but look at the beginning of the year. It was crap. Like, the only reason spring training exists or, like, is so long is to get to build up pitchers, right? Like, so, and it's always like a methodical, like, thing where, you know, they generally start at 1 or 2 innings, the starters. 1 or 2 innings, and then 2 to 3, and 3 to 4. And then they need like 5 or 6, like, spring outings, right? Some are on the backfields, you know, whatever. But they need to, like, methodically build up. Other relievers, they don't need that much. Hitters don't need that much. But, like, it's really just to build up starting pitchers. So, I don't see that, like, changing anytime soon.
Yeah, so yeah, I guess my only like caveat response was maybe if pitchers and catchers reported at the same time and they just did, you know, other ways to build pitcher arms, but maybe you just can't do that without the real game situation.
Yeah, you have. I mean, you have to like face guys. Like you have to, you know. I mean, they because there's like bullpen sessions and stuff before, like actually building up. Like so, yeah, it's a process.
But
it's just,
they don't need to have fans in the stands if it's not safe. So that's certainly.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
Which team will have the most unsigned ARB-eligible players when the deadline ends tomorrow? Here's a link to the current list.
So just as a background for this, tomorrow is the exchange date, 10 a.m. Pacific time, 1 p.m. Eastern. The player and team, like, exchange numbers, and, like, they could still, like, negotiate. But generally, like, if teams don't have an agreement by this, odds are they're probably going to end up going to a hearing. Now that means there's going to be a lot of, it's usually like a soft deadline. So, there's going to be a lot of players signing like 1 year deals tomorrow. Now, Craig gave us the list, MLB Trade Rumors has an ARB tracker up. I went through it just to make this easier on us and listed the teams that have the most currently unsigned players. The Dodgers have 7, for instance. There are 4 teams that have more. But like, do you have a guess on which of these teams won't come to an agreement? Like, I was trying to think, I didn't go back and look at last year, but I want to say there were something like, there's usually between like 10 and 20 hearings or like there's been less in recent years, but there's not going to be that many hearings, I don't think, but sometimes it just takes a little while to keep the negotiating going.
I'm going to go with Rockies.
Okay, so the Rockies also have 7 unsigned at the moment. So let's see. So the Angels have new GM, new front office. They have 6 unsigned, but so do the A's, Rays, and Reds. The Mets and the Pirates have 9 unsigned. I would say I'm just going to go with the Pirates because okay. – Just because they have so many already.
And they don't care if their players hate them anyways.
They're with 8. What? Say that again?
They don't care if their players hate them anyways.
That's right.
Not exactly a franchise that's been endearing themselves. So, all right, last question. Removing barbecue style from consideration, what is your favorite hot beef style sandwich? Chicago beef, cheesesteaks, French dip, or some other kind? I love all of these.
This is such a good, any of those 3 are so good. Like, so growing up, I was a huge French dip fan. There was a place called Billy Reed's in Palm Springs that had that. And like that was my go-to every time we went there.
Have you heard of this place called Philippe's?
Yes, exactly.
Just one of the biggest pre-Dodger game institutions. And I remember the French dip was like one of the first meals that I would order, like, it was maybe, other than maybe buffalo wings, the first thing that wasn't on the kids' menu that I liked. And I remember, look how adult I am. I'm ordering a French dip. Continental.
I had a French dip from the Hat like last week even. It was really good.
Did you get onion rings?
Yes, I did. Now, so Portillo's is another fun excursion, and Chicago beefs are wonderful.
They're really good.
I want to say cheesesteaks though for this.
My favorite sandwich is
I've never been to Philadelphia. Oh, I guess I technically was in Philadelphia for about 20 minutes once in a layover in the airport, but I have not had a true Philly cheesesteak, but I've had a lot of cheesesteaks in my day. Like, you
when
know,
you're able to come visit, I've been baking. I've been doing that quarantine thing and baking, and I have been perfecting a Philly or hoagie roll. So I feel like I can make a really good actual Philly style cheesesteak. Once I find a butcher that will get me some shabu shabu cut ribeye. So I'm working on that. I have had I've been to gyms and I think Pat's. I went to Pat's when I was in the eighth grade. I think it was Pat's. I'm not positive. And Jim's cheesesteak, one of the sort of few really well-known ones, was out of this world good. That said, my favorite Philly ever was from Lardo in Portland, Oregon. Nice. The only one that's beaten an actual Philly place. But even a bad Philly, and I know people in Philadelphia would not agree with me, right. I think is delicious.
There's a semi-regional sub place out here that's Capriati's. Mm-hmm. And like they're pretty good. They don't have a huge menu. I think their biggest thing is like a Thanksgiving style sandwich. Like that's their sort of go-to. But like they have a cheesesteak that like I don't know if it's the peppers they use that are like excellent. But I used to love that sandwich. There was a Capriati's like. Almost right down the street from me for the first few years I lived in Covina, and it's no longer there. There's a reasonably close one, but it's just a little harder to get to. So I haven't eaten there a ton, but like their cheesesteak was excellent in terms of like that.
Your decisions when you go to Philly or come to my place, and I'll have all of them available to you. You have to decide. With onions or not.
Right.
And then you have to decide one of three cheeses. How would you order?
Obviously with onions grilled, of course. And I would probably, well, like provolone's my go-to now.
Mm-hmm. As an adult.
If I was in Philadelphia though, and I would definitely try with, or you know, wit or whatever, or that is wit with the onion part, or whiz.
Yeah, that's the onions pit.
I would try it with cheese whiz for sure, yeah. Just because you have to.
I like all three. American is my favorite. Uh-huh. I use provolone when I make it at home though. So there you go.
Yeah,
now I like it. Might have to go make another Philly. I made some yesterday. They were chicken Phillies, but. I'm out of chicken. I have no beef, so I might need to go get some and make another one.
I'm gonna go drive to Capriati's and buy a cheesesteak today. So, and then drive by the Hat on the way home and get a.
Craig just asked these questions to keep the local restaurant economy afloat from you and I ordering more food.
That's right. He's always thinking about that. Well, this is our first episode we've recorded in 2021. Thanks for listening. We'll get to a point where we'll probably have some episodes coming up more often, like at some point soon. But yeah, thanks for listening, everybody. Go eat a beef sandwich and take a listen. Thanks for being with us, and we'll talk to you again in a couple weeks.